You are listening to an Elim Church Christchurch podcast. We hope that you are encouraged and inspired by the message you are about to hear. And if you're ever in Christchurch, why don't you pop in and say hello? We'd love to connect.
Awesome. Well, now it's my privilege to invite up Joel Cochran. Joel's been worshipping with us here about 2 years, 18 months, 1 year. It feels like a long time. But he's involved in business. But before he got involved in his business career, he studied theology, studied through Annesbrook and Nelson. So I just, it was on my heart to share, and the Lord prompted him to prompt me, and it was like, this is perfect. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you've got to share with us today. Joel, awesome.
Thanks very much. Oh, that's very loud. Awesome. Well, it's a lovely summery day here in Christchurch, and it's my absolute pleasure to come and share with you all. When Pete asked me to speak on the Joy to the World series, one that really kind of jumped out at me was God with Us, because it wasn't something I've ever spoken on before. And when we talked about it, Pete said, oh, that's actually really good, because that's what the other campuses are doing that week, and I'd kind of forgotten to tell you. So I think it was meant to be. I had a bit of an idea of a message I wanted to preach on before I sat down, and then I felt like God had other ideas when I went to write it. So just tried to be obedient with that and just follow along. So hopefully it's good. Please feel free to call out if you think it is good. I don't mind a bit of vocalism in the church. I'm used to that. But I've entitled this message, it's God with Us, There's Power in Proximity. And so to truly understand the miracle of the birth of Jesus and, you know, God coming to be with us, we're going to kick it back for the first point to the Old Testament. So before Jesus came along, access to God was very limited and very conditional. It wasn't what we know and experience as the church today. And we see that really clearly in the likes of Genesis and Exodus. There's times in the Bible where it would say the Spirit of the Lord came on someone temporarily to do a task or to overcome an obstacle in some way, shape or form. There's times where God would appear as an object, like a burning bush or a big cloud of, you know, mist or fire at nighttime. But it was dangerous, right? God, there was real power in there. When, you know, Moses saw the burning bush, God said to him, do not approach me. Like, you're going to get burnt up if you come much closer. And it comes from the fall, right, with Adam. God wanted to walk with man, but because of the sin that exists inside all of us as a result of what had happened, there was this barrier between the two of us. But that was really hard for God, because God created us to be with him. He wanted relationship with us. And so God, being very creative, would find ways around this. He would come and he would make agreements and covenants, and he would set aside conditions on how man could exist closely with God. And we see that with the Israelites after they exited Egypt and fled. You know, God said to Moses, you know, you're going to make this box, and it's called the Ark of the Covenant, and I'm going to be God in a box. You guys can pick me up and you can take me with you, and my presence will go with you. And so we've just got a verse to come up on the screen there in Exodus 40:20, and he says, he took the testimony and put it into the ark and put the poles on the ark and set the mercy seat above the ark. And this really stuck out for me when I was reading, because we've just done the 10 in a recent series, which was really cool. I thought it was awesome to go back and get to the fundamentals of faith. But something really symbolic here is that on top of the 10 commandments sits the mercy seat, because God's love above all is merciful, despite the fact that he knew while he was literally giving Moses those commandments, the Israelites were downstairs making idols. They'd forgotten already all of the amazing things that God had done and that God was doing for them, straight back to the past. But God knew that, and he accounted for that. And so I thought that was so powerful that, you know, within the presence of God and this holy box, it's most important that the mercy seat sits on top, and that time and time again, as we fail and we make a mistake, his mercies are renewed every single day. Now, that box was super important, right? The Israelites, as they moved around on their way to the promised land, every miracle, every significant miracle almost, the box was there. The walls of Jericho, they carried the ark around 7 times, and it was the box with them as they did a great shout and worship that the walls came down. When they had to cross the Jordan River, it was the priests who carried the box and the river dried up. So God is here. He's with them. But there's still limitations around what can happen. There's a point in the Old Testament where the ark is slipping and someone reaches out their hand, you know, doing what we would argue is the right thing. You don't want the box to fall into the water. And he dies on the spot from the power and the pure presence of God. You could argue he had the right intention, but we still existed and people, men were still existing with this separation from God. And so God said, I'm going to make ways that you can come forward and that you can be close to me. And he gives instructions for this temple to be built. And in the temple, there's the outer courts where people can come and they can bring their sacrifices. And then there's the holy place, which is where the priests will go and they will actually make the sacrifices to atone for the sin. And that would allow us to be cleansed. And within the holy place, there was a big curtain across the front. And within that was the Ark of the Covenant. And that was called the Holy of Holies. And that was where the divine presence of God would sit. And there was days and times in the Bible where they couldn't even get near it. There would be clouds and the presence of God would be strong, so strong on the place that no one could even go close. And if you think about a normal job, career progression, Pete said, I'm a businessman. Often as you work your way through the ranks, you might think, oh, I might get some more benefits and a bigger salary and maybe I'll get some more bonuses and some more time off. Being a priest in the order of, you know, the Israelites was not like that. If you got the job of high priest, your job was to once a year, you were allowed to go into the Holy of Holies. And it was so risky and dangerous that they would literally tie a rope to your feet because it was not uncommon that you would die just by going into that place and into that presence of God. So certainly in that time, getting close to God came with some very real and very tangible risks. But it was so important because God wanted to create a way that man could be cleansed and man could come near to him, despite the fact that he knew time and time again we would fall short, we would fall away, we would fail. So that's the status quo, right? The Israelites from all the way back to the Exodus of Egypt are still living in that place and are still practicing this when Jesus comes along. Does anyone here like movies? Are we movie buffs? Yeah, I'm a big movie buff. I'm a real sucker for sci-fi. Anything Star Wars, Stargate, Battlestar Galactica, all of that stuff. Like, yeah, absolutely love it. I do have a Stormtrooper costume in my garage at home. Some of you have probably heard about it. I absolutely love sci-fi. And a wee while ago, one of my friends was saying to me, oh, you've got to check out Dune, this new movie. I'm a little bit younger than some of my other friends, and I hadn't grown up watching the old school one. So I went in and watched the reboot with no context for what I was going to see, but it was such a, there was just this powerful moment in the start of the movie that really stuck out to me. There's this whole nation called House Atreides. They live on a beautiful, luscious world. They have an incredibly strong air force. They have an incredibly strong navy, and they're regarded as like the ruling house under the emperor that are the most influential and the most powerful, and they sit very well respected. And there's this desert planet on the other side of the galaxy, and it's just snowstorms. Sandstorms all day. Like, you imagine the Sahara Desert times 10. And there's a group of people that live there, and they've been oppressed for generations, again and again and again, by the people that rule them. And this messenger arrives on the planet to the Atreides, and they go to their leader, and they say, the emperor is calling you to come. What is your response? And honestly, when he responded, I got literal goosebumps and chills. And he says, we are House Atreides. There is no call that we do not answer, and there is no faith that we betray. And in that moment, while I was watching it, I almost broke to tears. I felt like God said, that's how I felt when I sent my son for the world. There's no way that God was ever going to let us be separate in eternity from him without doing every single thing he could to get us back into relationship. You know, he was willing to give up all of his strength and all of his power, just like in this movie. You know, they're strong for their Air Force and for their Navy, and they're going to a desert planet where it's sandstorms all day. And literally after the scene, the Lord's son comes to him and says, Dad, why are we doing this? And he says, look, we're going with major risks. We're probably all going to die, but we have to for the people, because there's people there that need to be saved. And it was such a powerful parallel for me that I just couldn't not acknowledge it, because that's what God did, right? He was sitting on the throne in heaven. He was completely safe. He was completely protected, and he said, I'm going to go, and I'm going to live a human life. I'm going to be born. People are going to try and kill me. People are going to hurt me. People are going to actually kill me. And knowing all of the risks, knowing that he would be led by the enemy and tempted, and that he was going to have to face and overcome all these trials, he still came anyway, because God is never going to betray that faith. He's never going to betray that promise that we are his children and he loves us. And so as Pete kind of talked about, you know, the prophet Isaiah said, you know, and it's referenced in Matthew 1:23, behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel. And that literally means God with us. You know, we talk often about the resurrection, but in this moment, God was completely reversing the whole paradigm. He's going, you don't have to come before me anymore. You don't have to come and make sacrifices. You don't have to come to a physical place, a physical temple. Like, he was born and he was tangible. You could reach out and touch him. You're not going to get zapped and it's all over. He's saying, I want to be close to you. I want to be with you. I want to be God with you in a true, real, and relational sense. And so, like I said, there's power in proximity. God grew in a human womb, and even right as he was born, you know, there was plots out to kill him. There was a whole genocide of that generation because, you know, the enemy was so scared, and he knew that the implications of what would happen if Jesus could live his whole life and fulfill all the prophecies that were made about him. And we hear throughout the word many times where people were drawn near to Jesus, and in that proximity, there would be amazing miracles. There's a woman, you know, 12 years, she suffered with an incurable issue of blood. She reaches out and touches the hem of his cloak, and she's immediately healed. You know, there's times where Jesus would reach down and, you know, touch things and then touch a person, and amazing miracles happen, because that's the power of God. This is the creator of the universe who made all of us and delivered all those miracles for the Israelites in the Old Testament. But he's here, and he's seeking a very real relationship with me and you and all of the people of the current day. You know, when Pete kind of mentioned this last week, it was probably quite scandalous when they said, look, you know, there's going to be a virgin, she's going to give birth, and that's going to be God. Like, I can imagine at the time, the religious leaders of the day would have been quite upset by that, because it challenges the status quo and the mindset of what they had been, you know, believing and practicing and knowing for thousands of years. I can imagine that, you know, you'd probably be quite, you know, sheepish to get up and share that, because you know you're going to get some flack and a big response. But that was exactly what God had in plan, and he wanted people to be aware. But in spite of that, a lot of people would still hold true to the old ways. And that was why he needed to come, because he had a plan for something different and for a new way. You know, we as men were living in rebellion, and he knew he would have to come and pay the ultimate price. But he also knew that the system that he had established in Exodus was broken. And so we've got another verse there. It says in Matthew 21:12-14, and Jesus entered the temple and drove out all who sold and bought in the temple. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold pigeons. He said to them, it is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, but you make it a den of robbers. And the blind and the lame came in the temple, and he healed them. You see, over the course of all these hundreds and thousands of years, this whole temple system had become a bit of a rigged system. The people, the religious leaders and the rich had set it up that, you know, you couldn't come and just bring your own sacrifice anymore. You can't just bring any old dove. You can't just walk in here with that. We've got these special, pure doves, and you need that for the sacrifice. You cannot BYO. And in fact, your money is actually also no good here either. You need this kind of universal temple currency. So you will bring your money, and we'll charge you a nice fee for the exchange rate for that. And then we'll allow you to purchase one of these very special, you know, temple animals for sacrifice. And this is why Jesus was so appalled and disgusted when he saw it, that it's, you know, one of the few times we hear about, you know, anger rising within him, because it's a righteous anger. He saw that, you know, what God had intended as a way for man to access a relationship with him and redeem and purify ourselves had been perverted. And also he's going, you guys don't need this anymore, because I'm here now. And that's why that end is an immediate end when it says the blind and the lame came to him in the temple. You know, previous to that, they would have been out in the streets, you know, social rejects and people that wouldn't have been allowed. This is a pure and holy place. You guys are considered unclean by society. We don't want you here. I can only imagine what the officials and the priests would have thought, seeing that all of a sudden you hear this big crash, tables are flipped over, there's birds flapping all over the place, and then, you know, all of a sudden there's all this hubbub and people are literally like getting up and walking, and people who are blind for their whole lives are seeing. And he's saying, you know, this is what it means. This is what relationship with me looks like. It's not bondage and it's not conditional. There's freedom, and I want to bring freedom for everyone. And so, yeah, he really came to kind of upset the whole apple cart of what it was and be God. He lived a human life as a small boy, and he worked a job for most of his life and most of his career, and it was only about, they reckon, 3 years that he actually did all of the miracles in the ministry. And so he could truly say, I've walked and lived the perfect life that no one else could do to fulfill that condition for relationship with God in lieu and in place of what we would fall short to do. Which is just so powerful and so amazing. Which brings me to my last point, which is, you know, Jesus is not just God with us, but he's actually God in us. In Deuteronomy 31:8, it says, it is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. And, you know, I think in the Old Testament, they had a really good understanding of that, right? There was all these miracles and signs and wonders, and they'd seen God turn up again and again and again, but it fell short of this personal relationship in the way that Jesus was coming to bring. And so if we look at 1 John 3:24, it says, whoever keeps his commandments abides in God and God in him. And by this we know that he abides in us, by the Spirit whom he has given us. You know, even after Jesus came and died and then came again and resurrected, he left the Holy Spirit to be his helper for us, and he also wanted to come in and have relationship with us in our hearts. You know, Jesus said, none can come to the Father except through me. He didn't say with me. He didn't say, I will lead you and I will walk by your side. He said through. There's a passing through that needs to take place in order for us to be right with God. And the great news is, because the message is joy to the world, that it's free. It's for everyone. He's paid the price. Jesus, as the keys come, has already gone and done the things that needed to be done. The only step that is left is for us to actually just say yes. He's a gentleman, right? He pursues us, but he stands at the door of our heart and he knocks. He waits for us to let him in, because God would never force something on us. He always gives us the free will and the choice. So we're just going to pray in a minute. And I'd really like to just encourage you, whether you've never known God, you've never said yes to God before, you know, this message, I hope, is really for you. And maybe you have. Maybe you've walked away. You know, God says that he'll be with you all the days of your life. And he wants to give you a chance to come back and to come back home with him. You know, a few weeks ago, my wife and I were at the warehouse, and they had this big bin of Hot Wheels cars right at the front of the store. And my three-year-old boy, Seth, as soon as he saw it, he just took off. And I had to chase after him. And tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, buddy, you know, make sure you stay with us. We don't want to lose you. And he was like, oh, it had happened. He'd wandered off, but he hadn't even noticed it. He thought he was walking with us the whole time. And that can happen as well with our walk with God, right? We can be distracted. There can be things going on in life, and we can go, oh, my gosh, I've kind of just slipped away. Or maybe I thought I was walking with you, but I didn't actually look and check. And this is just as much for you as well. So we're all just going to close our eyes, and we're going to pray. Yeah, so, dear Lord, if you can just repeat after me, we'll all pray it together. Dear Lord, I thank you that you love me. Thank you that you came to be God with us. Today, I say yes to you. Come into my heart, make me new, and be God with me.
Thank you for listening to this Elam Church Christchurch podcast. For more information about our church, you can visit www.elamchristchurch.org or connect at one of our services every Sunday at 10 a.m.